Morning, everyone. Today's Daffing Sivus is Lamed Dalet. We're on Lamed Gimel Amid Beis. We are in the middle of a discussion. The Gemara is in a lengthy discussion about what happens when you have a collision of Mamon and Malkus. It's not a collision, but really an intersection. A person does an act that invokes both corporal punishment of Malkus together with a financial obligation of Mamon. So which of the two do you give him? So you only give one of the two, and it's just now a question of determination of which one of the two you give him. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf Tafis Lan Lezech Nishmas Libra Gabriela Bashmuel. It's machlokis so far in the Gemara between Ula and Rabbi Yochanan. Ula says money. Money is the operative punishment, and the Malkus is going to take a backseat to the money. And Ula notes, even according to Ula, there are a couple. No, I'm sorry, not yet. That's Ula's position. Rabbi Yochanan says no. Malkus is the operative punishment that you give somebody. And the notable two exceptions to this, according to Rabbi Yochanan, is going to be Edom Zomim and Chavala. Edom Zomim and Chavala, where the Torah goes out of its way to say, although it doesn't say it explicitly, we learn it out through drushas, but the Torah goes out of its way to say that in those cases when you have both Mammon and Malkus, you do Mammon, the punishment is Mammon, but Rabbi Yochanan says, but the default punishment, given the choice between the two, is going to be Malkus and not Mammon. Why are we struggling with the question? Meaning, why is it coming up over here in Ksuvos? So that's because the Gemara asked the question. The question was first articulated going all the way back to the very bottom of Lamed Alpha Amud Beis, and we're already on Daf Lamed Gimel Amud Beis, but the Gemara articulated the question all the way back on Lamed Alpha Amud Beis, how to resolve the discrepancy between a Mishnah here in Ksuvos and a Mishnah Makos. Mishnah in Ksuvos says that when a man violates any one of his relatives, actually, we're going to talk later on this morning, there might be a distinction of relatives. But if a man violates a sister or any one of the women who are Yisuri Kares, so our Mishnah says he has to pay money, even though he's not going to marry her, but he has to pay the Knas, the fines that were imposed by the Torah. Meanwhile, the Mishnah Malkus says that if a person violates any one of these women, he's subject to Malkus, because he had relations with one of the Arias. Well, which Mishnah is it? Can't be both. Can't be both Mishnahs, although, again, later on this morning, we're going to entertain the idea maybe it can be. But the assumption of the Gemara is that it can be both. You can only give one punishment and not two punishments. So to that, the Gemara says, okay, so we just have to determine which is the rule and which is the exception. Good, so that's machlokes between Ula and Rav Yochanan, and that's what we've been discussing now for some time. Yesterday's Daf Lamed Gimel, the Amud Aleph of yesterday, brought in other drushas, other ways to arrive at the conclusion that by Edom Zomimim, there is not, it's going to be a financial obligation, and it's not going to be and you're not going to get Malkus, assuming that there's a choice between the two. Okay. We find ourselves on Lamed Gimel Amud Beis. We are starting with the words, here's a source. Meaning, once again, we're looking for a source in the Torah that teaches us that that in the case of chavala, when I do damage to somebody else, and so there's a monetary obligation and there's malchus, so we're going to go with money over malchus. So how do I know that? So the Gemara now is going to give us another possible source. Remember, yesterday, the Gemara attempted to give a source based on the incident mentioned Mishpatim. It's not an incident. It's just the Gemara. The Torah comes up with a case where one person damages another person, and it was incidental. In other words, he was really intending to hit one person by accident, hit another person, and unfortunately, he caused a miscarriage. So the Gemara thought that could be a source to use to describe whether or not it's money over Malkus. The Gemara challenge that source, and the Gemara now is going to go turn to a different source. Ela Amar Rav Yaakov min Arpakod Mishmei Derava. So we're on Lamed Gimel Amud Beis. It's about 10 lines from the top of the Amud. So let's say a person hits another person and seriously injures him to the point where we don't know if he's going to make it or if he's not going to make it. So the Torah says that what you do is that you hold the assailant until we find out what happens to the victim. So the Torah goes on to describe Im Yakum. So if the victim gets up, he gets up back to his regular strength, Vinikamakem. So the person who hit him, obviously, is going to be exonerated. So the Gemara says, that point is so obvious that he's going to be exonerated. Of course he's going to be exonerated. The Gemara asks the question, meaning, what did you think? Point being so obvious, right? Somebody gets hit. Let's see if he recovers. He doesn't recover. Or he recovered? Okay, you let the victim go. I'm sorry, you can let the assailant go. Well, of course. So the Gemara says, "Ela melamish chovshin or so." So the Gemara says, obviously, that's not the chiddush of the Torah. The chiddush of the Torah is what if the other option happens, meaning there's another result, and that is, let's say he doesn't make it. So chovshin or so, which means that we take the assailant, we put him in some form of prison, right? As we pointed out a number of times, incarceration is not one of the ways that the Torah punishes, right? That's a more modern phenomenon, although it's not that modern. But in other words, the Torah does not legislate incarceration many times. Here, it's one of those rare instances where we see incarceration in the Torah, and the only reason why we're incarcerating him, not as a form of punishment, just simply to find out what happens. So chovshin or so, v'imeis katlin alei, and if he dies, so then we're going to take the assailant and we're going to say, okay, you're a murderer. V'ilo meis shifto yitim v'rapo yirape. Now, what if he doesn't? Okay, good. So that's really the point of the Torah. The point of the Torah is to tell us that if he dies, meaning if the victim dies, so then we go to the assailant and we say you're responsible for his death, and therefore it's a capital crime, you're a murderer. Now that we know the right context, that we're dealing with a case of murder or possible murder. So now let's go on. Now we can analyze. So the Torah goes on to say, the Gemara says, V'ilo mishif to yitim v'rapo yirapay. Now if he doesn't die, so what does he pay? He pays the regular damages that you pay. You pay shevis, you pay ripui, and of course the assumption is you pay the other payments as well, the regular compensatory damages when you hurt somebody. So hechidam idolo asur be'amai mita. Now the Gemara says, was there a warning or was there not a warning? Of course there was a warning. Because remember, we already contextualized the Torah. We're talking about a case where if he dies, the assailant is going to be put to death. The only reason why you put the assailant to death is because he received a warning. And then the Gemara further argues, look, also, we have a principle, although it's debatable, but we have a principle which is that if you give him a warning for a harsher punishment, included in that warning is also a warning for a lighter punishment as well. So in other words, you're attempting murder, you know the Torah says you're not allowed to murder. And included in that warning, even though you don't actually say it, is, and oh, by the way, you're not allowed to hit somebody. Right? Meaning you didn't articulate those words, but that's included also in the warning as well. So that means that you warned him not to hit him. Okay, so ultimately, when all said and done, the person didn't die, he recovered. And now you're on the hook. You, the assailant, are on the hook for two things. Number one, you hit him. Number two, you have to make all those payments. What does the Torah say? Shifto yitim v'rapo yirapay. You pay. So here could be another possible source that teaches us that in the case of chavala, given the choice between malchus and mammon, you go with mammon over malchus. Okay, again, it's a complex, constructed case because, once again, the Torah doesn't say it explicitly. We had to put together a bunch of assumptions and premises, but once we did that, the Gemara says, here's a source. But the Gemara says, this is challengeable. So first of all, the Gemara says, you built this case on a premise that may not be true. You warned him not to kill him, but that may not include a warning not to hit him. That was an assumption you made, and the Gemara says maybe that's challengeable. And the Gemara says, and you know what? Let's even argue that no, a warning for the harsher punishment is a warning for the lighter punishment as well. But if you remember yesterday, the Gemara made this very same argument yesterday. Let's make it again. How do I know that death is harsher than Malchus? Maybe Malchus is harsher than death. Meaning, given a choice, a person would say, death Malchus, you know what? I hate pain. You know, just end it. And a person would choose death over Malchus. And the Gemara says, and really, and again, we did this yesterday, and we're going to do it again today. Look, Nebuchadnezzar, I got it right today. Yesterday I said Achashverosh. So the Nebuchadnezzar gave the three young men a choice. They said, either you're going to bow down to the Tselem, or you're going to put you into the Kivshan Ha'esh. So heroically, they chose the Kivshan Ha'esh. The Gemara says, okay, but let's say that wasn't the choice. Let's say the choice was, you know what, either Tselem, either you bow down to the Tselem, or we're going to torture you. So the Gemara says, maybe they would have chosen Tselem. Now I know that Gemara is being extremely cold in throwing cold water on their heroism. In other words, they were ready to sacrifice. They didn't actually do it. The Kadosh Baruch Hu saved them, but they were ready to sacrifice their life rather than bow down to Tzelem. And the Gemara says, "Yeah, but what if we would have tortured them? What if Nebuchadnezzar would have tortured them? So that may have been different." Now, again, as we pointed out yesterday, the Gemara is not saying they would have. The Gemara is just simply saying torture is that heinous, where a person will choose and something over death, but not over torture. So the Gemara says, they would have chosen death over bowing down to Tzelem, but not necessarily torture. So Amalei Rav Samar Breid Rav Asi Rav Ashi V'Amalei Rav Samar Breid Rav Ashi Rav Ashi V'Loshan Lach Bein Akashi Yesh Lo Kitzva La Akashi Yesh Lo Kitzva. So the Gemara says, wait a second, let's not call Malkus torture. It's not torture. What's the difference between Malkus and torture? Malkus is finite. They know exactly how much they're going to give him. In fact, remember the Gemara in Malkus. Not only is it finite, but if he can't handle 39, we give him less than 39. So that's not torture. That's punishment. And I know where it sounds the same. It sounds like semantics, but it's absolutely not. Torture is endless. This is not. So the Gemara says that you don't see the difference between that. Mask of Lora Mari Mi Ma'ad Bemezid. All right. So again, what the Gemara is just trying to do now is just simply challenge the proof. It seems to be good proof from this episode in Chumash, from this halacha mentioned in Parshas Mishpatim, but the Gemara says it's not necessarily proof. And finally, the Gemara says, and we could really dispel the entire proof with one more challenge. Maskaflar Rav Mari mi ma'ida b'mezid v'nika mikatala doma b'shoge v'nika migalos. Also, let me ask you a simple question, says the Gemara. We know that a person hit another person. And we know that it was a blow that nearly killed him. And as we just described, you incarcerate him, you put him in some sort of penitentiary, you wait to find out what happens to the victim. All that's true. We know. But maybe this wasn't intentional, maybe it was unintentional. And we know the halach is that when you unintentionally kill somebody, so galus, you're sent into exile. That's also Masechta Makos. That's the second parak of Masechta Makos. So maybe the Gemara is asking over here, this is not going to be a proof at all, because we're not talking about someone who's subject to capital punishment. Maybe over here, the only thing that we're going to see is whether or not he should be sent into exile or not sent into exile. That's another way to challenge this proof. And the Gemara says, Kasha. The Gemara says, that's difficult. Meaning, you're right. We don't know that it's talking about Mezid. It could be talking about Shogig. And if that's true, then we have no proof whatsoever. And, okay, so it was an attempt at a proof. But, you know, in the laboratory of Gemara, some proofs work, some don't. And just this one doesn't work. It is interesting. Tosfos discusses it. You can see the third Tosfos on the Amud. Just mention it briefly outside. And that is, generally speaking, unintentional murder that results in galus. So the exile punishment is only if you know you were the cause of his death, meaning you didn't intend to kill him. But you have to know, in order to be subject to galus, you have to know that you were the one responsible for his death, and there was no other cause whatsoever. So, and generally speaking, how does that knowledge come about? When he dies immediately. In other words, when you kill him and he dies immediately. But if he doesn't die immediately, so we don't absolutely know that you were responsible. And so, generally speaking, that's not a threshold to be sent into exile. And over here, the way the Gemara is presenting it, if, let's say, you hit him by accident and he doesn't die right away, and it takes some time, and then he dies, sounds like from the Gemara that you're going to be sent into galus. Tosfos grapples with that, because that's, generally speaking, not the threshold in which you're going to be sent into galus. Okay, so you could see Tosfos for that discussion. Reish Lakish Amar. Okay, we are now at the two dots of the Gemara, Mor Lamed Gimel Amud Beis, and we're going to continue. And when I say continue, I mean we are going to attempt to resolve the question that has been bothering us now for 3 days. Since the bottom of Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, the Gemara asked the question, we have a Mishnah in Ksuvos, we have a Mishnah in Makos, what do we do with those two Mishnahs that we put side by side? So is it money or is it lashes? So machlokas between Ul and Rav Yochanan, and now we'll call this opinion number three. Opinion number three: Reish Lakish Amar Amani Rabbi Meirhi Da'amar Loke Umishalem. So the Gemara says there's a third option, and that is that maybe the author of our Mishnah is Rav Meir, which, by the way, makes perfect sense. And generally speaking, we say that's Stam Mishnah Rav Meir. Then when you have an anonymous Mishnah, the author of the anonymous Mishnah is Rav Meir, and we also know that Rav Meir is of the opinion that when presented with two punishments of Malkus and Tashlumim, so Reb Meir says, you don't have to choose. You do both. Both are unleashed. Now, we already know this by Reb Meir because we saw the Mishnah back in Malkus, by Edom Zomimim. Remember, the Mishnah over there describes how when Edom Zomimim are subject to both Malkus and Mammon, what does Reb Meir say? No. Give them both. So we already know that Reb Meir says give them both. So what Reish Lakish is doing over here is just simply saying, good. Now that we know the Shita of Reb Meir, now granted he's a minority position, which is, I'm guessing, why Ulan Rav Yochanan didn't want to take our Mishnah and line it up with Reb Meir, because it ultimately is a minority position, but it works, it now makes sense why our Mishnah and the Mishnah Makos, our Mishnah describes money, the Mishnah Makos describes lashes. Okay, good. If it goes like Reb Meir, the Amaloka Mishalam, I Reb Meir, Afilo Bitonami. So the Gemara says, okay, but here's what I'm bothered by. Really, our Mishnah is going like Reb Meir? So why is it that we're going to learn soon enough in the Mishnah where if a man is Ma'anis' daughter, he does not pay money? That's what the Mishnah will tell us later on in our parak. What's the difference? Now, we already know the difference is, well, if we don't know yet, we're going to know in just a moment, we already know the difference is as follows. When a man has relations with a sister, that's an Issur Kares, but it's not a capital crime. But when a man has relations with his daughter, that's a capital crime. Like we noted a number of times already, in the world of Arayos, right, it's all Arayos, meaning it all falls under the category of Erva, but the punishments for them are different. Some of them are with Kares, some of them are with Srefa, some of them are chenek. Okay, just different crimes for the punishments, even though they all fall under the category of arayos. So the Gemara says, so why, if Reb Meir says that you get punished and you pay, so why does the Mishnah later on say that if a man has relations with his daughter or violates his daughter, so he's not going to pay? Now, we assume the reason why he's not going to pay is because of the rule of because it's going to give the harsher the two punishments. The problem is that if you're aligning our Mishnayos with Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Meir obviously says, no, we don't go with one punishment over another punishment. You give both punishments. So the Gemara is asking now what seems to be an extremely legitimate question. How do you understand the Mishnah coming up that says when a man violates his daughter, he doesn't pay? So the Gemara says, well, maybe we could draw a very simple distinction. That Reb Meir says that Malkus and Mammon, that you do both. Misa and Mammon, that you don't do both. The Gemara says, now, in of itself, that's not an unfair proposal, but Vehatanya. The Gemara quotes a Braisa, and the Braisa describes the following: Gan of a Tavach b'Shabbos, Gan of a Tavach la'avodas kochavim, Gan of shor nizka v'tavcho. Let's get our bearings over here before I explain the Braisa. Okay, you know that when you steal and when you're caught with the stolen goods, so not only do you have to make reimbursement, but you have to pay a second time as well. It's what we call in halacha kefal. Okay, if you return it on your own, somewhat of a misconception, I think. If you return the item on your own, you don't have to pay double. Right, double is a fine if you're caught with the stolen goods. If you come back and say, look, I stole, I'm really sorry, I want to make good, so then you only have to, that's it. In other words, Heishiv is Gzela. You return the item that you stole, and that's it, and you're good. But if you stole, and if you're caught with the stolen goods, so then you have to pay double. Let's say you stole, and after stealing it, you either sell it to somebody else, you fence it, or you shecht it. So there the Torah says, if it's an animal, you have to pay either four or five times the amount of the animal. Okay? A significant fine imposed by the Torah, where not only you stole it, but then you compounded the theft by either shefting it or by selling it off. Okay, four or five times, by the way, depending on what kind of animal it is. So whether it's a sheep or whether it's a cow, large animal, small animal, but anyway. So now the Bryce over here describes the following scenario. Let's say you stole the item and you shecht it on Shabbos. Let's say you stole the item and you shecht it for Avodah Zarah. Really, I mean, in terms of halacha, you're just having a bad day. I mean, just a miserable day. You're a thief, and also you're violating Bein Avdom L'Makom, Bein Avdom L'Chavero. Just miserable. Gan of Shor HaNisko V'Tavcho. Or let's say you steal a Shor HaNisko and you shecht it. Mishalim Tashlomi Arba V'Chamisha Devre Meir. So Rav Meir says, you are on the hook. Meaning, you are not only going to be subject to a capital crime, because think about every crime we just described over here. Shechting on Shabbos, that's malacha. Shechting for Avodah Zarah, that's called worshipping Avodah Zarah. That's a capital crime. Sure, on Nisgal,
Sure, Nisgal has no value.
By the way, I didn't explain this, and I should have, and I apologize. Sure, Nisgal, that's talking about an animal that gored three times. The animal itself needs to be exterminated, needs to be killed. And the animal has no value whatsoever. We're going to have to come back to that. We're going to have to explain that better. But anyway, in all these cases, Rav Meir says, you're going to have to pay. Now, what's Rav Meir saying? It's very simple. Rav Meir saying is that despite the fact that what you did is a capital crime, and certainly in the first two cases, nevertheless, compounded with that, you also had to pay because you were a thief and you shechted. So Rav Meir says, so well, you know what you're going to do? You're going to do both. Agreed. No argument. The theft occurred at a different time. But the obligation to pay four and five times is coming concurrently with the time that you shecht. Okay. So you are violating a capital crime and you're gonna have to pay. And of course, if you were given issued a warning, you're gonna be subject to the death penalty and so forth and so on. So you see that there's no difference from Rav Meir's standpoint, whether it's Makos Mamon or whether it's Misa Mamon. Rav Meir is of the opinion that both punishments are enforced. V'chachamim potrim, and the chachamim say no, he's exempt from having to pay. And presumably, according to the Chachamim, the simplest way to understand their position is kamle b'derabimine. Look, he did two things with that act of shechita. He violated a capital crime, and plus, he also stole. So kamle b'derabimine. So the Gemara says like this. Okay, so I know the Gemara here is now a little bit complicated because we're looking at a Braisa and we're asking a question of Rav Meir, and the reason why we brought in Rav Meir is to try to explain the discrepancy between the Mishnah Ksuvos and the Mishnah Makos. But if we can all just keep it clear. So we are now suggesting that our Mishnah and the Mishnah Makos is going like Rav Meir. Rav Meir says that you do both, Makos and Mamon. The Gemara is troubled because the Mishnah later on, which we haven't seen yet, says that when a man violates his daughter, he does not pay the knas, and presumably because that's a capital crime punishable by Beis Din, so therefore kamle b'derabimine. If our Mishnahs are going like Rav Meir, there should be both punishments are enforced. The Gemara suggests to make a distinction that maybe Malkus and Mamon you do, according to Rav Meir, you enforce both, but not Misa Mamon. The Gemara just quoted a Braisa that said, no, even the case of Misa and Mamon, you do both according to Rav Meir, both the capital punishment and the monetary obligation. So to which now the Gemara is going to try to deflect, and here's how the Gemara deflects.
Is this with money or without
money? Huh? It doesn't matter. And you'll see, I say that very confidently right now, you'll see later on why I say it so confidently, but it does not matter. So, Ha'idmar la Amr of Yaakov, Amr of Yochanan, Amr la Amr of Yirmi, Amr of Shimon, Amr Lakish, Rabbi Avin, Rabbi Eli, V'chol Chavrut, Mishmeid, Rav Yochanan, Amrei. So the Gemara says, yeah, that was a long introduction. But if you knew what everybody said about that braisa that we just learned, then you'd understand that the question is not a question. B'toveach al yedei acher. You, the thief, you didn't shech the animal. You got somebody else to do your dirty work for you. You say you handed the animal to somebody else and said, look, I just stole this animal, shecht it for me. Okay. The obvious question, which is the next question of the Gemara, v'chizeh chote v'zeh mischayev, wait a second. You don't outsource averus. Right, you could certainly try to, but in terms of punishment, ein shliach l'dvar aveira, you can't say, yeah, but he told me to do it, and therefore I shouldn't be held accountable, he should, because he told me to do it. So the basic rule, Gemara Kedushin, second parak, we'll get to it in about a year from now, a little bit less actually, but anyway, ein shliach l'dvar aveira, so the Gemara says, so what's going on over here? I stole, I handed it to somebody else, I asked them to shecht it for me, and I'm on the hook for dal vehei, and to which the Gemara is about to teach us is, yes, because this is going to be an exception to the rule. Amar Rava, Amar Rachman, V'tav Chom Echaro. Because when the Torah describes its 4 and 5 time penalty, the dollar of hay that one pays for either selling or shechting, you'll notice that the Torah has two verbs that would invoke this 4 or 5 time penalty. Either utvacho, either you shechted it or you sold it. Now, a sale, obviously by definition, needs another party. You need somebody else to sell it to. Ma mechira al yedei acher, af tvicha al yedei acher. So just like selling it requires somebody else in order to invoke the 4 or 5 time penalty, so too shechting requires somebody else in order to invoke the 4 or 5 time penalty. Now, this is an accepted halacha, which the Gemara cites a number of sources to get to this point. The Academy of Rabbi Shmuel learns it from the word O, that it includes the shliach. Some learn it from the word tachas. Either way, however you arrive at that conclusion, that's the halacha. That the dal vehe, that the 4 or 5 time penalty that one that the Torah invokes on a thief for having shechted is only when he asks somebody else to shecht it. So maskev lamar zotra miyika mida di'ilav et iyu lamechayev avishlecha mechayev. So the Gemara says that's strange. It's just strange, says the Gemara. Meaning, imagine, he shechts it himself. No, I don't have to pay the 4 or 5 time kenas. I give it somebody else to shecht, and now I have to pay the 4 or 5 time knas. So the Gemara says, "Iulah mishum dala mechayev." So the Gemara says, "Now wait a second, you're misunderstanding. When he does it himself, it's not because he's not chayev. Ela mishum dekamle b'drabemine. The reason why there's an exemption that is created is because of the principle of kamle b'drabemine, meaning that assuming that the shechita was a capital crime in of itself, like we just described." Either he did it on Shabbos, or he did it for Avodah Zarah. So just like the Shechita was a capital crime, so, not just like, because the Shechita was a capital crime, so therefore, the penalty, the financial obligation to pay 4 or 5 times, it's not waived, it's just overridden. Meaning it's there, but we have a principle in the Torah that says that you get the harsher of the two punishments, and therefore you don't have to pay. So, but if you hand it to somebody else to Shecht, so now you're on the hook. Meaning, number one, you stole. Number two, you either sold it to somebody else or you asked somebody else to shecht, which the Gemara says, based on drashas, is tantamount to you shechting. So that creates a liability of 4 or 5. You didn't actually shecht, which means that you didn't actually violate the capital crime of shechting on Shabbos or shechting for Avodah Zarah. And so therefore, you're going to be on the hook for dal vehei. The Gemara says that's what the Bryce is dealing with. So now the Gemara asks, what is going to be a fantastic question. In the Bryce, we just explained this Bryce to be describing not where the thief himself shechts the animal, where he hands it to somebody else to shecht. And because he hands it to somebody else to shecht, so he's now going to be on the hook for dal vehei. Because in this exceptional rule, somebody else shechting is tantamount to him shechting. So he's going to be on the hook for dal vehei. To which the Gemara says, huh?
And the Asian is in the chayav of misa, I guess.
Yeah, right. My feelings as well. Meaning I don't know, but of course it makes perfect sense.
But if you didn't know he was stolen.
The Gemara Baba Kama goes through. Right, the Gemara Baba Kama, I'm just remembering vaguely. I don't remember clearly, but the Gemara Baba Kama has a number of descriptions of whether he knew or he didn't, the Shlech knew or didn't know. But right now, let's just deal with the Brisa at hand. Then the Gemara says, okay, if that's what the Brisa is talking about, remember, what was there was another opinion of the Brisa, and that was the Chachamim. What did the Chachamim say? Exemption. You don't have to pay dal vehei. Now, wait a second. The Chachamim are not arguing what the case is. In other words, we do this all the time. When we give an ukimta to a braisa, it has to be one case. So the case hasn't changed. And so now that means that the case in question is that a person stole an animal, gave it to somebody else to shecht, which under normal circumstances creates a liability for the ganav himself, where he has to pay 4 or 5 times the amount. And because he himself didn't shecht it, so therefore there's no kamle b'derabim minei, so that means that he's on the hook for dal vehei. That's the way the Gemara now is explaining the Braisa. So then what's the Chacham's viewpoint? I mean, they say, oh no, he's exempt.
Okay.
Why doesn't he pay? So the Gemara says, So if the Bryce is talking about were you the guy that didn't shechted on Shabbos, but somebody else shechted on Shabbos, my time mayu de rabbanan de patre. What is the basis of the opinion of the Chachamim who say that you're exempt? That opinion doesn't make sense. Why should you be exempt from having to pay? You're not the one who shechted the animal on Shabbos, and so therefore you don't have the halachic rule of kamle b'derabimine. So to which the Gemara now is going to provide an interesting answer. Man chachamim Rabbi Shimon hi. The opinion of the chachamim is none other than Rabbi Shimon. Da amar shchita shein ruya lo shmei shchita. It is a extremely technical answer, but one that is one that is halachically accepted, and that is the following. We know that there are many times in the Torah where a shchita is demanded. Rabbi Shimon's of the opinion, we see this his opinion throughout Shas, and that is that in order for a shchita to be a valid shchita, in order to give it the name shchita, the legal designation of shchita, the shchita has to result in me being able to eat the animal. If the shchita does not result in me being able to eat the animal, it doesn't qualify as a shchita. Obviously, what I did is I killed the animal. Obviously. But in other words, it doesn't reach the threshold of shchita. Anytime the Torah demands shchita, this doesn't qualify. So for example, and sometimes in a halacha that helps you, and sometimes in a halacha that's going to hurt you. Here, oddly enough, it's going to help the thief. Now again, it's a technicality. It's totally a I was about to use the word loophole. Okay, let's pretend I didn't say it. It's not. It's a technicality. In order for shechita to be a valid shechita, according to Rabbi Shimon, it has to be edible. So now, I shecht an animal for avodah zara. What's the halacha? No one's allowed to eat it. It's takrovis avodah zara. That was an animal that was offered for avodah zara. It's aser be'achila, it's aser be'hana. So you're not allowed to eat it. So because you're not allowed to eat it, so what's Rabbi Shimon going to tell you? That shechita isn't deemed a shechita. When the thief shechts an animal and has to pay 4 or 5 times its value to the owner, that's only utvacho umecharo. That's only if the person shechts it. The Torah says tavach. Here, because that shechita didn't result in eating, it therefore is not a shechita.
So he's not mechal on Shabbos, he's saying? How could it be? Did he kill the animal?
He killed the animal.
So it's still mechal Shabbos.
Right.
And it's still have to give it to Avodah Zarah, no? I mean, it is still an act of...
Meaning, as far as takrovas avodah zara is concerned, yes. But for takrovas avodah zara, I guess it does get a little bit tricky. We know that for takrovas avodah zara, you need to shecht it. Okay. And for Shabbos, as far as Shabbos is concerned, I'm thinking right now off the top of my head. It's not the best way for me to think. Right, he killed it, which is a chabura, which I guess is Michal Shabbos. Okay, good. Okay. Now the difference is that for certain halachas you need shchita. Okay, that's what's behind the Gemara. So the Gemara says, okay. So let's see. There are 3 cases that were discussed in the Braisa. So 2 of them, I understand, says the Gemara, with no problem whatsoever. Number 1, avodah zara. I get it. You shecht an animal for avodah zara, you cannot eat it. According to Rabbi Shimon, it therefore means that the shchita wasn't a shchita. Okay, I get that. Shor HaNiskal, I also get. And by the way, now the Shor HaNiskal case makes perfect sense. Meaning when we read it originally in the Braisa, what kind of capital crime are we talking about? Now, makes perfect sense. Again, the Shor HaNiskal is an animal that needed to be killed because it gored 3 times. It killed 3 times. Actually, truth of the matter is it needed to be killed even after the first time, but... Okay, it killed 3 times. It's a Shor HaNiskal. So in such a scenario, the person shechted it because it was judged a Shor HaNiskal. After the Gemar Din, you can't get benefit from it whatsoever. And now because you can't get benefit from it whatsoever, Gemar says it's not a shechita, and therefore the thief is going to be off the hook on the. On the 4 and 5 time penalty. But, here we get to an interesting discussion in the Gemara now. What if I shecht an animal on Shabbos? Can I eat the animal that I shecht on Shabbos? Now me, the one who shechted the animal, I violated Shabbos by doing so. It goes without saying. But does the animal itself become prohibited to eat? And this takes us to the topic of Maisa Shabbos. Maisa Shabbos, a topic that's discussed a number of times in Shas. Here's one of them coming up right now. And that is that if I violate Shabbos, and we're going to make a distinction between Shogeg and Mezid, as we'll see in just a moment. If I violate Shabbos, can I benefit from that which was done on Shabbos? We're not talking about the person, we're talking about the result, that which he did. So, the Gemara is going to introduce us now to this topic. So, Shechita Ruyeh did not. First, the first thing the Gemara is going to do and introduce us to this topic is quote a Mishnah Shabbos. The Mishnah in Chulin. Okay, first parak. If a person checks on Shabbos or on Yom Kippur, even though it's a capital crime when doing so, the shchita that he did is a kasher shchita, meaning the person himself violated a capital crime. The yielding result of the shechted animal, fine. Meaning that would be correct. What that goes against Rabbi Shimon?
Yeah.
No. What? Oh, I'm sorry. Now I'm understanding. You're asking Phil's question, meaning that if you can eat the animal.
Why is it called shechita?
I'm sorry. You're just confusing me, or I'll just blame myself. I'm confused. Okay.
No,
you shechit an animal on Shabbos. The Mishnah Chulin says it's fine, meaning the shechita that you did, yeah. In other words, you violated Shabbos, but the animal itself is kosher to eat. Okay. Now, Savala Karev Yochanan Stanler, so the Gemara says, okay, that's a Mishnah Chulin, and that's all well and good. But as we're about to see now, it's a three-way machlokas as to whether or not one can benefit from Isa Shabbos. You've done an act on Shabbos. So again, we're not talking about the perpetrator of the act. His punishment is his punishment. It's actually pretty clear. If he did it b'shogeg, karban chatas. If he did it b'mezid, either kares or capital punishment, depending on whether he got a warning or he didn't get a warning. We are discussing the resulting act of that which he did. Can you benefit from that which was done? So the Gemara says, I'm a vash b'shabbos b'shogeg. So as I pointed out, there are three opinions over here. Wait till opinion number three, because the Gemara is going to say, that's the opinion that we, meaning we in the Gemara here in Tzuvos, on today's daf is going to be subscribing to. So opinion number one, if you cook on Shabbos and you do so b'shogeg, you do so unintentionally means you forgot today was Shabbos, or you forgot that cooking was a malacha, yochal. A person is allowed to eat the food that was cooked in such a state. B'mezid, but if he did so intentionally, knowing it's Shabbos, lo yochal. He's not allowed to eat a divrei Rabbi Meir. And what you would need to do, we're not going to do it right now, is you would need to analyze Rabbi Meir's opinion in terms of when he says not allowed to eat it, does that mean you're not allowed to eat it today, but you're allowed to eat it tomorrow? Does that mean that you're not, that somebody else is allowed to eat it? Meaning you can analyze, and you should analyze Rabbi Meir's opinion in more detail. We are not right now, because we are going to get to the third opinion. That's the opinion that we're gunning for. Rabbi Yehuda Omer b'shogeg yochal amotzei Shabbos b'mezid lo yochal amis. Rabbi Yehuda says that if you shecht an animal b'shogeg, this is obviously the second opinion. If you shecht an animal on Shabbos unintentionally, so yochal amotzei Shabbos, you can eat the animal, but only after Shabbos is over. B'mezid, but if you shecht the animal intentionally, lo yochal olamis. So then you are not allowed to eat the animal forever. That's Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. And now we get to the third opinion, and this is the opinion that we are focusing on. Rabbi Yochanan Sandler, Rabbi Shogi Yochel Lamotzei Shabbos. If the animal, l'acherim, I missed an important word. If you shecht an animal on Shabbos b'shogeg, meaning you forgot it was Shabbos, so there was no malintent, it's just that you were negligent. So, Rabbi Yochanan Sandler takes the harshest viewpoint, which is that after Shabbos, others can eat it, but not you. Then, b'mezid, but if you shecht an animal intentionally on Shabbos, lo yochal olamis lo lov lo la'acherim, then nobody, not you, not others, never can eat the animal that was shecht on Shabbos. So now what the eat the animal that was shecht on Shabbos, yes. And now what the Gemara is saying is as follows. Now we go back to our Braisa. Our Braisa described three scenarios. Scenario number one, I shecht an animal for avodah zarah. Can't be eaten. There, and we're holding, the Brice is holding like Rabbi Shimon. It's a shechita shein aruya. It's not considered a shechita. He's exempt from dal vehei. Yushet ashor aniskal. Can't be eaten. Not a shechita, according to Rabbi Shimon. Therefore, you're going to be exempt from dal vehei. You shecht an animal on Shabbos. Assuming now that this Brisa is the authored by Rav Yochanan Sandler, same result. You can't eat it, not you, not others, never. Therefore, it's not a shechita. Therefore, you're going to be exempt from dal vehei. My time with Rav Yochanan Sandler. Let's continue in the Gemara. What's the basis for Rav Yochanan Sandler? It's a drasha. The Torah compares Shabbos to Kodesh. Actually, the Torah calls Shabbos Kodesh. But we're in the world of Drush, what we're going to do now is we're going to equate Shabbos to Kodesh. Now, when we say Kodesh, we're talking about carbon. What do we know about carbon? Carbon has Kedusha, it's Hektish, it's Aser. Now, granted, by the way, there are occasions in the world of carbon that you're allowed to eat it. But that's Mishochan Gavo Kazachu. You're eating off of God's table. But without that license to eat, it's Hektish. You're not allowed to get any benefit from it. So too, anything that was created on Shabbos, same result. Hektish. You're not allowed to eat it. Ima Kodesh Aser Banaf, Maisa Shabbos Aser Banaf. So the Gemara says, okay, as long as we have this drasha, let's play the drasha through. So that would then mean that by Hektish, not only are you not allowed to eat Hektish, you're not allowed to benefit from Hektish. So let's say the same thing. A person shechts an animal on Shabbos. So with this drasha, let's conclude that not only are you allowed to eat the animal, you're not even allowed to get benefit from the animal. So Tamar Lomar Lachem, Shalachem Yehei. So the Gemara says, no, built into the drasha is a heter hana'a. Because the Torah says, Vishmatam sa Shabbos ki kodesh hi lachem, kodesh is an iser. Lachem is a heter. Right, I just spoke about it yesterday in the shir. Lachem being a heter. Lachem is a heter. So that means then that Kodesh is the one is telling us the restriction that you're not allowed to eat it. One of the words Lachem is telling us a heter that you are allowed to get benefit from it. So that's how you arrive at that conclusion. So Yochel Afilu B'Shogeg. So the Gemara says, okay, now maybe this would be true even if I shecht the animal B'Shogeg. Tam Lomar Mechal Alamos Yumas B'Meizet Amartu Lach V'Lo B'Shogeg. So the Gemara says, no, it's because the Torah there in that context describes how you violated the Shabbos. Violation of Shabbos comes about through Meizet, not through Shogeg. Okay. That's the opinion of Rav Yochanan Sandler. That's what we're going to plug into the Braisa. Now that we're plugging that into the Braisa, you can't eat it. And because you can't eat it, therefore it's a shechita shein aruya. And then the thief now, who shechted the animal on Shabbos, is not going to pay the dal vehei on a technicality. And the technicality is because the author of the Braisa is holding Rav Yochanan Sandler, and because you can't eat it, it's a shechita shein aruya. And therefore, according to Rabbi Shimon, it's not a shechita. I know today's a complicated Gemara. It's like one of those Gemaras where you got to hold a lot of opinions in balance in order to see where the Gemara is going. It's just, okay, it's a little trickier. Pligi bar Ravach Ravida Chadamar Maisa Shabbos Daraisa V'Chadamar Darabanan. Maisa Shabbos, is it an Issa Daraisa or is it an Issa Darabanan? So Man Dama Daraisa Kedamar. Now the Gemara says, the one who says that's Daraisa, based on what we just said. Drasha, Pasuk, Mechala Mos Yumas, Kikodeshem. Good. Man Dama Darabanan. Now, there are those who say that even according to Rav Yochanan Sandler, it's not an Issa Daraisa, but rather it's an Issa Darabanan. What about the Pasuk? Amarka Kodeshi, he Kodesh Ve'imasa Kodesh. So the Gemara says, as far as the Drasha is concerned, actually the Drasha teaches us just the opposite. He Kodesh, meaning the Shabbos has Kedusha, but the activities that are done in Shabbos are not given the status of Kodesh, and therefore Minat Torah, you're allowed to eat the animal that was shechted on Shabbos, but midrabanan, you're not allowed to. Ulaman da midrabanan, my time midrabanan de patre. So the Gemara says, okay, now if you subscribe to that viewpoint, that minotaur you're allowed to eat the animal, but it's a din derabanan that prohibits you from eating the animal, so now let's go all the way back to the Braisa. So our thief, who shechted the animal on Shabbos. And again, as we learned a moment ago, he outsourced. He got somebody else to shech the animal on Shabbos. But why is it now that the Chachamim say he's not going to pay? Especially if you hold that Maisa Shabbos is only Nisr Darabana, not Nisr Daraisa. That means that on a Torah level, you're allowed to eat the animal. So it is considered a Shechita. So why is he exempt from Dal Vehei? So the Gemara says, very simply, Kika Patri Rabbanan Asha'ara. So the Gemara says that when there was an exemption from payment, it wasn't going on the shechting on Shabbos, that it was going on the other two cases, shechting for Avodah Zarah and shechting a Shor Haniskal. Okay, good. Clear?
Hopefully.
Okay. Let's just summarize, and then we'll pause over here. And tomorrow short daf. So tomorrow, hopefully, we'll catch back up to where we need to be. Although, again, admittedly, this it's complex. It's just because it's based on so many various opinions. Again, the main discussion that we're having, the root of the entire daf today, as was yesterday, as was the day before, was when two punishments are in the hopper. Of Mammon and Malchus, which of the two which of the two comes out first? Meaning, because you only give one of the two, Mishum Rishah Chas V'tam Echayvel, V'yitam Echayvel Shtei Rishayos. So we had a machlokes between Ula and Rav Yochanan. Ula says money, Rav Yochanan says Malchus. And then today we introduce ourselves to a third opinion, and that is Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Reish Lakish says that the Mishnah is going like Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Meir says both. Both Malchus and Mammon. What about the fact that the Mishnah, which is coming up soon enough in our perek, says that a person who violates his daughter is not subject to payment? So that's on Lamed Vav Amud Beis. So if Rav Meir says he give both, what about that Mishnah? So Rav Meir draws a distinction between Mammon and Malchus and Misa and Mammon. Mammon and Malchus both, Misa and Mammon not both. Okay, that's the Gemara's distinction. And then really what we then covered for the rest of today is, how did you understand that braisa about someone who stole an animal and then shechted it on Shabbos, where according to Rav Meir, both. But basically what we concluded is that he wasn't the one who did the shechita, somebody else did the shechita, and even though the general rule is ein shlech l'dvar avera, this is the exception to the rule. Actually, to be honest, and when we get to the second parak of Kiddushin, you're going to see there's another exception to the rule. And there's a... I'm just remembering out loud. There's a possible third exception to the rule of Beit Shammai, but this is one of the exceptions to the rule. But that's what the Bryce is dealing with, so therefore the Bryce doesn't impact our Reish Lakish's viewpoint over here. Okay, we'll pause and we'll continue tomorrow.